Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, pre-recorded show. Ha ha. Actually, you're listening to it the same day I recorded it. How's that sound? July 25th, 2009. Well, we have callers. We had quite a night last night. The live show on Friday night. Got a lot of, you can watch it on Ustream, the Fred Bell Show. And if you want to reach us, you call 1-800-729-2603. So anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to continue on with what we were doing last week. Continue on with this really juicy little seminar piece we did a while back. So are you there, Dr. Bell? Oh, Dr. Bell, where are you? Hello. He'll be up in a minute, I think. Hopefully. We'll see.
There's only two pieces.
There he is.
Creek that I've sold. He's got one. You've got one. There.
Oh, the big heart one?
Yeah. He's got a heart shape. Not that one. Which one?
The one I think
that at the same time you sold was a... Did I sell these in Macro? I don't think so.
We're talking about the Mac Earl crystal. I mentioned that last night on the show, as a matter of fact. It's MC, capital MC.
Cluster.
EAR.
Oh, yeah. That's what you want to know about it. That's the healing, that's the Coleman mine crystal. The old Coleman mine. And is that mine, that particular, that's the majority of the crystal that we have is coming from there right now. When that mine runs out, its price will start to go. That's the best. That is the best. Next to Mac Earl, the Coleman mine is number two. So there's a big jump down in price. You're going from something that costs upwards of $5,000, low side $2,500 a pound, down to something that costs around $100 a pound. Okay, that's the jump down to the next. You get into and then certain clusters that you'll buy. Will probably
$2,500 is now $5,000 a pound.
$200 a pound. These are top,
like a diamond,
museum grade quality crystals. And I didn't bring any of those out last night. I had a few up there on the table where the flames were. If you noticed them, they were there, and there were a few put away that I'd show people when they're ready to see them, because those big crystals don't even want to be looked at until the time is right. You know, those are in my private meditation area. But once you start networking and using this stuff and getting an appreciation for it, then I open up the door and show you some other things.
How do you pronounce that?
Mac Earl? Mac Earl. M-C, capital E-A-R-L. It was the guy that found it was Mac Earl. One thing that I didn't show you, I meant to, but I forgot about it, was a coin that St. Germain gave me. I was telling some people at lunch. On one of the working for the United States Bureau of Intelligence is a naval commander. He's a friend of mine. He commanders a destroyer, a tin can, for the U.S. Navy, currently in commission. And he runs Navy SEALs on missions for the Central Intelligence Agency. He's a cellist. Anybody that has that kind of a job has got to be supernatural, right? I mean, that's a major deal, running a tin can around for the CIA as we speak. Last time I spoke to him, he was down in Cuba doing something at Guantanamo Bay. Now I found later on they set up a camp for the Haitians, but he was opening up the ground for that. He's a child of Count Saint Germain, and he, Count Saint Germain, in his presence, materialized a gold coin from King Constantine's time, a solid gold coin. You remind me. You haven't seen it yet either, have you? You remind me to show you that. Is perfect, and then he gave it to me. I have it at the house, and it was about the size of a dime, maybe a little thicker, solid gold, and it was 300 years after Christ's time. It was a coin used in Christ's neighborhood, and it was a gift, and we use it in the system sometimes. And when we had it analyzed by an expert, you know, naturally you got to have stuff analyzed. You can't believe this is really happening, at least I can't, but it really did. The guy that analyzed it said, he even told me the mint that the coin came from in Constantinople. There's a mint, and they make it out of clay. But the uniqueness of this coin is it's never been touched by humans. It's only been touched once or twice by me, and then it's moved in a little plastic bag. And the guy that authenticated it said he'd never in his life seen a coin so beautiful, so perfect in that time. And he even showed me the little scratches. I said, how do I know this isn't counterfeit? He said, because the counterfeiter would have to be a genius, because there's little clay, they cast the mints in the clay. The gold was cast in clay, and the molds wore. And he could see from different times how worn out the foundry, the exact mold, that was so brilliant, you know, it was looking at this coin. That was a manifestation through the system, through the fire star. Because this particular Chela, who's the Navy commander, naturally, on the boat, is our stuff, you know. I was leading into that earlier. The very first one of these, no, not this one, that one, the Star Ward, the very first one I ever built and sold, I sold it to the KGB. They bought it from me. They took it to Russia. And they were training ice skaters with it because they found that, the KGB knew they had to get one of these, and they found that when you get rid of the negative energy, it gets rid of fear, and fear causes accidents. Later on, the Aspen Ski School, the Aspen Extreme, where that was filmed, uses all this in the radiators, and they point them out at the slopes, and they used to make people wear these things when they were training to ski on these big slopes, so they wouldn't have accidents. So there's so many uses for these systems, and they've gone in so many places. Potrero, when I was telling you about Hernandez was abducted by the Andromedans willingly and taken away, and his wife was accused of murder, but finally they couldn't find the body, and he left a diary. She thought he had a girlfriend, but it was really not Liara, but one of Liara's friends took him off. Potrero came to me when I was lecturing here. They used to follow me around. When I first started this Pleiadian technology in the 70s, we were still coming down from the 60s. There was a tremendous paranoia from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They'd investigate, and the Central Intelligence Agency knew that something big was going on. So I had all the KGB, and I had these different foreign agencies always coming to my seminars and checking things out. And so Potrero, I didn't know it at the time, but
right.
I got.
What do they say? They
use it. No, they use it. You know, they like it. There's no fight at all. Once in a while, I'm a good guy for the CIA, and another time I'm an asshole. I mean, if you hear it, depends on where their heads. I don't even worry about them anymore. I mean, when they want information, they're right in my face, so they want to ask me stuff, and then we trade off stuff. You know, they gave me information on all their underground bases, and when they were going to move from Area 51, they told me where they were going, and they gave me information on three different races that are Wright Patterson. They've got a lizard, they've got a gray, and they've got some other being that's in a suit. I mean, I get a lot of information, but I'm not passing too much of it on. And then I give them information about the Andromedans. They definitely know about the Andromedans.
What do they say about
them? Well, what are they going to do? They ask me what they're going to do. They don't know what they're going to do.
They
what can they do? They were out of Area 51 when Sean Morton, some of you know, he lectures on extraterrestrials, and he gives regular excursions out to Area 51 so you can view alien technology being flown by the U.S. government. I told him one time, we had a sighting up here in Laguna a year ago, November a year ago, on a Wednesday night. I had a sighting. Liara came in an orange ship, like an orange glow, and hovered outside the building there. And it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll never forget it. And the next thing I know, the ship was gone. It was a huge ship, big orange ship hovering out over the ocean. Exactly 3:12, 12 minutes later, I get a phone call from David Tickle, who uses all these systems in production of music in the world. And he produces albums with U2, and I told you, Bill Collins and all that. He's big, very big. He's about as big as, he's actually the biggest there is in record production. And he was doing a recording one time with a group called Colors for BMG. And he had 2 Firestars in the studio. He's got $1 million deal going with a record company, and the damn Firestar broke. Stops the whole operation. Artists, engineers, all stop. Fred Bell, get up here.
The fire star is broken. We can't create music without it. So
off I go. He was supposed to come last night, but he got tied up. He wanted to come to the thing. He likes to come when we hit the vortex with people. He likes to be there. But anyhow, on this Wednesday night, he called me up. He says, I just got woke up from a dream, and the Andromedans are here. What does that mean? And he says, oh, by the way, I apologize. You called me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Were you up? I says, yeah, I just had a contact with the Andromedans. David says, wow, you know, and hangs up. Well, I had told Sean, this was on a Tuesday night. I'm sorry, it was a Tuesday night this happened. No, it was a Wednesday night. No, it was a Tuesday night. The reason that the sequencing was a Tuesday night this happened. Then I got a call from Sean Morton that he was going up early Wednesday morning to Area 51. And I said, no, I didn't need to go up there that night. But I told him the Andromedans would be there, and they were going to make some giant move on the place, be looking for it. And I had been up there a month earlier with David Tickle, and they made some giant move on the place, but all we noticed was the ground was blowing a little bit around where we were in this Range Rover, and the guards were chasing us, as they usually do. And so they were stalking us, you know. You get off the boundaries and the guards come up, the wagon hut, they make sure you don't go across the border so they can shoot you, you know. So they already said they're going to make a move on Area 51. It's going to shake up the government pretty good. So I said, John, you'd be looking for that. And I said that this orange ship had hovered over there, and David Tickle, that's what we want, David Tickle waking up. And it's interesting when I tell these stories, because when you start getting in the networks, you're going to hear the other side of it.
What do they do?
Sean said at 3 o'clock in the morning, when the Old Faithful was coming in, or whatever comes in, some ship that comes in, one of the Aurora ships comes in, he says a giant ship came across the horizon, a big mothership, he figured, and blanked out the entire, he named how many constellations were not there anymore, because this big black thing was hovering over Area 51, basically swallowing up the entire sky over it. I mean, all the desert sky. And they're a big ship. And I had told Sean the night before. So then he comes down. He's out there Wednesday night, and this is happening. And I don't know. He called me Wednesday morning. He's going out there. This happens Wednesday. I told him to contact Tuesday the day before. So he goes out there, and this happens. So he comes in Thursday afternoon back. It takes a while to drive back. Calls me up. Brad, I got information for you. I got to come. I got to see you tonight. Come on down. So that was Thursday night. Tuesday night, I had this orange spear. Wednesday night, they covered up Area 51 with one ship. And 11 o'clock on Thursday night, he comes down with some reporter from the Los Angeles Times. And we're sitting there at 11 o'clock at night, and I'm telling him the story of what happened with David Tickle and the big orange object. He's telling the story the following night. The whole horizon with 13 people witnessed this. It's covered up by a big ship. And it's 11 o'clock at night, and I'm saying, and right over there was an orange glow. And Sean is there, and this lady from the LA Times is there, and guess what? As we got up to that moment in the sequence of events, and I'm pointing out the sky where the ship is, it comes in again. Here comes the orange glow again, and Sean just goes, whoa! I says, speaking of the devil, there it is. There's what I saw a few nights ago. And he sees it now, the same ship, hovering in the same place, did some aerial shit, and wow. We looked at it through the telescope, because it was huge. It was a big orange thing. It looked like, you know how the sun goes down and gets a big glow? Not like that, but at 3 o'clock in the morning. This was 11 o'clock. So this is ongoing all the time. I mean, this is tonight, maybe. Who knows?
What are they doing? What are they actually doing?
I don't know. They're here, and they're all around, and they can I be talking about them, and they'll appear.
Do you think ultimately there's going to be a confrontation between the
Greys? No. They step on them like flies. They don't even pay attention. The Andromedans don't even notice the Greys. The Pleiadians. The Andromedans ran them out of their area a long time ago. The Pleiadians ran them off. And they're here. And they're just... They're doing what they're... They're a necessary evil, you know. They're feeding bullshit into the secret government. And that's great. And that's what... The secret government is so gassed up on flies, you know. And when they captured that first one in 1952... And the guy from John Hopkins was up there at Wright Pat where they had him in here. They had him spooned for an hour, a year and a half. All the damn thing is lied to him all the time, you know. They went and had that confrontation in 54 at Muroc Field. And they landed with Eisenhower there. It was in January or February, about the 18th of 54. And they're out at Muroc Field. They gave a demonstration of what the Pleiadians have shown me of a holographic generator that shows it's what's called an event time transposer or something. I mean, she explained what it was. I have it in my notes.
And when she showed me, it was a shipwreck. Because they have instead of watching TV, they can just focus into the Akashic records and watch a shipwreck that occurred on Earth 100 years ago. You know, so she showed me that. The graves showed the secret government out there at the Murdoch, which is now Edwards, the crucifixion of Christ. They showed him that on their television set in their ship. And they said, we created him. And they believed it. They said, we are genetic masters and we created Jesus Christ. He was a genetic mutation of your race. And they're feeding this kind of bullshit into the secret government. The secret government believes it and they're freaking out now. And to give you how intense it is, I have a direct involvement also with the secret government, obviously. And one of my direct connections is a guy by the name of James Anthony. James Anthony had a business partner who recently died. Okay, he was married to Margaret Habsburg. Margaret Habsburg, when her husband died, at the same time the Rothschild fortune was breaking out. This is a big conglomerate of secret government money. When the Rothschild group broke up, she gave Margaret Habsburg got a personal infusion of cash, you know, into her bank account of $4.3 trillion. That was 1/12 of the Rothschild estate. There's one individual control of $4.3 trillion, the same size as the national debt, one individual. Do you think this guy in Japan with $18 billion is rich? He's chump change next to a Rothschild or next to a Habsburg. Margaret can't bring the money into the country because that would destroy our economy, 4 points. So she's only allowed a few million at a time, and it sits in the European banks. The Habsburg family owns 60% of Europe. Margaret recently just bought a cathedral. It's costing $1 billion to bring a cathedral from Europe and put it in Palm Springs, which she's currently working on. When Margaret was living out there, they were living out when her husband was alive, he was a scientist. And he had his own fortune, she had hers. Obviously, hers was bigger. James Anthony was his partner. James told me about Margaret's husband working out of they lived in an estate off of Sandia Labs out there, and they had three graves living in residence in their house with them. Okay? When you have $4.3 trillion and you're a scientist, you can have three graves living with you, and they did. Okay? Get the picture, it's for real. I mean, you're starting to know a little bit more. This is real stuff, what's going down. This is not imagination. And I'm seeing this from different angles. And I'm interpreting it the way I'm supposed to, whatever that is, you know. So it's pretty awesome. But now, the next, this, of course, we talked about the Omnion now. I think we're running out of time. I need to rush through this a little bit. This is all the projectors. These are the different seminars that we do. So my wife did the Firestar explanation yet? Drop the bell. Did she tell you about the Firestar today? She was supposed to. This thing, did she explain it all to you? I'll show it, explain that to you. But basically, the Firestar doesn't work. Let me just finish up the system here. This is the system in Hawaii, Systems 3, that Ron Spencer owns. This is the one when he set it up over there. The Dalai Lama came to it, and this right here is a picture of his son, who was born in the system. Okay, so this kid was born when they put this system up in Hawaii. There's the master crystal. This is back in 1981, so it was there's an earlier system. The Omnion wasn't as sophisticated. The Dalai Lama saw it on TV, and he ended up coming over to Ron's house, giving him $10,000 and taking him over to India to teach him how the system works. Bottom line, what that was all about. And he's been involved ever since. And then recently, I guess Ron, we just came back from Tibet again a few days ago or a week ago. If you want to learn more about it, he's been talking to Joe more than he has me lately, so he can bring up to date what they're doing. The one system they got in Kathmandu, and they're getting it into the world grid system now. They're also doing some work down in Glastonbury. This is the thing I was trying to find yesterday in the slides. This is an illusion. Okay? And when we had that, you know that unit up on the champagne reflector? It was up there. What it does is it teaches you not to see the... You haven't done the Firestar yet, have you? So you're going to do that when I quit, right? Okay.
when and you're going to come up later and get in the truck, right, to bring it. Okay. You know where the keys are, because I don't know where they are. Okay. If you look at this, if you're programmed like most people are, for the scan reading television sets and other things, this is going to look like three Pac-Men, one giant white triangle in here. That's what it appears to most. But it's not. There's no triangle there at all. What there is three Pac-Men and three little black triangles. There's no white triangle. And the champagne reflector teaches you not to see it that way. It teaches you to see it the way it really is. That's breaking through illusion, the form. Okay? It also, when you start seeing through this, you can see through veils. Okay? Veils are temporary visual consciousnesses that are placed to protect something. In Glastonbury, in the King Arthur's time, about 500 years ago, there was a place called Avalon, and there was a lake. And in this lake, if you went across this lake in one consciousness, you would arrive at the other side of the lake in a Benedictine monkery, where the Benedictine monks made grand meuniers and stuff like that. If you went across the same lake and arrived at exactly the same point in another continuum, okay, which is now a second eater, you ended up in a village called Avalon where white witches lived. Okay? This phenomenon still exists. So Miyazi took me up to the where I showed you that picture yesterday in Aspen, and showed me a giant city that I didn't even know existed. I had to hike about 3 or 4 miles in the snow across the highway that was closed for the winter to the top of a mountain at Bluebell's Peak, up where those saucers were hovering. And boom, she said, watch this, and bam, a city appeared out of nowhere, big lights and everything. And there was white wolves all over the place, lots of big white wolves. She said, don't be afraid of them, they're here to protect the city.
If you design the forest on a ship like that using deuterium or tritium,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, this. Well, I was explaining when you were in the room. You look at that thing. You better not see that white pyramid in the middle because it doesn't exist. If you do, you're programmed by advertising labels and television sets, scan rates, and so the champagne reflector gets rid of that. And when you set the champagne reflector up, we saw one at my house. There was a green laser on it, and there was a red laser on it. When the sun goes down, the laser immediately strikes the crystal in the reflector, giving it the glow of a sunset. And then at 9 o'clock at night, the green light goes on. The green laser goes on, gives it a night glow. And then there's the yellow laser that I haven't put up yet. He's got his up all running now. He's got three of them. It goes on. It makes sunshine at 2 o'clock in the morning. So it breaks the cycle of night and day in consciousness and allows you to see very clearly at night and way better in the daytime.
What's the champagne?
Yeah, it's the unit I'm talking about. I'll show you a picture of one in a minute. This is the unit. The way I got the design for it, we were living at on a banana-shaped lake, right in the middle of the banana. It's called Ammersee Lake in Munich, and outside of Munich, in a condominium right on the shore. And one night, the moon was coming up over the back side of the lake. It was a long, narrow lake. And there was a fog bank in the center of the lake, about 400 feet high. And the moon was lighting up the back of the fog. And so it was like a giant rear screen projector at midnight on a German lake in the middle of wintertime. Beautiful. It was just like a beautiful, going to a drive-in theater and having it projected from the rear. But the projector was the middle of the lake. And all of a sudden, across the middle of the lake, I see this whole medieval army riding with horses and everything right across the screen in the fog. And I could see the tassels on the back of their helmets and their flags. They had these real long, narrow flags. And it was gorgeous. There was about 200 or 300 of them. They rode right across the lake. And I says, what was that? And so Miyazi told me that was, in time, this was an etheric, another world. There was another world in another dimension, parallel universe in a previous time, and I was witnessing it. There just happened to be a veil breakdown that night, and I happened to be in the right space.
And then she gave me a design of that champagne reflector. You know, so that's how it came about. This, of course, is where we were last night, looking out. This is the system. That's the champagne reflector up there. Now, when you turn a laser on, the very top on the right. Now, when you turn a laser on, okay, when you turn a laser on, interesting thing happens. Okay, we got a lot of lasers in the house. This is why we have so many. This is an interesting phenomenon. You have a laser inside of a laser tube. There's a little hole right there. Do we have a laser here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that on?
No, you can just put.
Did you shine it on something for me? Okay. What happens is, inside the laser is a gas, right? Here you've got a 5X mirror, a mirror with 5 coatings of silver on it. And down here you've got a mirror with 10 coatings of silver on it. So I can stick. When you turn on a laser, what happens is there's a white light in there. It's called a xenon flash tube. It generates white light. Seven levels of consciousness are generated simultaneously. White light. All the laser does is absorbs the green energy, central frequency of the hydrogen atom. It only absorbs green. It's all it cares about. I don't care if it's a blue laser, output violet laser, any color you can name, it's only absorbing green. If you look at the molecular structure of the gas in the laser tube, or if it's a crystal laser, you know, like a ruby, you've got a whole bunch of electrons and protons existing on a physical plane. As soon as you turn this green light on, or white light on, the gas in this tube causes these electron-proton relationships, hydrogen atoms, helium atoms, to expand. It starts sucking in green energy from the fourth dimension, the astral plane. When it expands, it physically pushes the electrons away from the protons because it's like filling up a balloon with water. It's expanding now with energy from the astral plane. Okay? This is called pumping. Pretty soon, this balloon is so full of water, the electron is so far away, it's going to break. That's exactly what happens. It breaks down. The electron collapses on itself, back to the proton. When it collapses on itself, it releases huge amounts of photons from the fourth dimension. And these photons, which weren't on this dimension previously, because they don't exist here, light photons, they came in from the fourth dimension, from the inside of the molecular reaction, they all run down the laser tube and phase. When they get down here to the laser tube at the 5X mirror, they're reflected back to the 10X, they start building up energy. They keep building up energy until it gets going so fast, one of these mirrors is going to break down. And it's a little mirror, but it breaks, you get a beam out of it. So you get a beam of photons directly from the fourth dimension, the astral plane. If you take that beam of energy and throw it into a crystal from the Akashic Records, like this one over here, you start to see this glow. See that glow? See how that glow starts to go outside the crystal? Okay? If you stare into that thing long enough to meditate into it, into that glow, just hold it still, that glow fills you up. And what it's done is filled your consciousness with fourth dimensional energy. If that happens to be a master crystal, it starts unloading the secret of the universe into your consciousness. That's why we use lots of lasers. That's why we use lots of crystals in our system, for that reason. When you get into a room which is on a vortex that's sanctified, like our living room is, you start charging the system up, like we did last night, a couple things begin to happen. First of all, when you're in a house like this, your body is giving up amino acids continuously. And these amino acids are sticking molecularly into the walls of the floor and the ceiling. So you've got stored living protein material embedded in the walls, okay? And you get into an old 50 or 100 year old house or the Queen Mary, you've got a huge amount of energy stored. When you stimulate that energy with intelligence from the fourth dimension, Remember, the fourth dimension is where the astral plane. The astral plane is where you go when you're disembodied. That's where you go when you die and you come back. That's where you go when you transit from one plane of time to another. You start creating an energy field that stirs that up. It allows entities to close themselves in it. And this is called plasma, and this is called ectoplasm, the phenomenon of spirit, you know, the energies going in, pulling this out of the walls, gassing it and filling it, becomes ectoplasm. Now this is a picture right here of the champagne reflector as it's filling up with energy, okay? And if you notice Mandy, last night, she's resting now, but she's absorbing it on another level. She had that camera going all over the place. The reason she had that camera going all over the place last night was taking those pictures is because she's seen these pictures before, and this is ectoplasm spilling right out of the fourth dimension into the floor of the carpet right in front where the laser from the master crystal is down here. It's a huge spillage of ectoplasm. Now, this happens. Our house has got so much energy that there's so... Don't unplug my slide projector and burn my bulbs out here. This happens so much that under certain conditions, and we don't know what she got in her camera last night. Some of you that have quick eyes will see this. But the phenomenon starts bringing the room up to etheric. Please don't unplug my projector. Do that again. And so what happens is you start to get manifestations. In this case, inside the champagne reflector is an angel. And you can see its wings. Okay? They materialize right there. And the photographer that took this is from Germany. He's an expert in taking this kind of photography. It's like the same kind of... When they took Channel 4 down in the hall of the Queen Mary, they heard that little girl, and they recorded her voice. You have the right conditions, you record this phenomenon. Because, as I say, we're moving in by the year 2000. We're moving into the astral plane. The heaven worlds are being destroyed. The phenomenon has got to go somewhere. So get ready for it. It comes out in sanctified areas like that vortex up there, but it can also come out in your house if you sanctify it. Okay? This angel right here, when she came in, he caught it. She couldn't stay very long because there wasn't enough field energy to maintain her form. So in the next slide, when she flew out, we zoomed in on it immediately when we saw her, when she flew out, she started dematerializing. And so as she came across the room, she went back into the fourth dimension. Okay. That was up there at the house, and that was captured on the film. And that's why Mandy over here was running her camera like a madwoman, because anybody who's been in that system one or more times and knows what's going on in there, they want to capture some of this and take it home. So this is the kind of stuff that goes on with these kinds of systems. Now,
can you find a picture of the scale?
Yeah, I'll get there in a minute. It's coming up. I got one more thing to explain here, and I'll just show you some pictures, and then we'll be done. The talk about them is finished up. Okay. If you take a beehive, okay, here's a beehive. This is in nature now. Another Pleiadian lesson. Okay. If you take an angel, okay, an angel would be hovering. And this angel, when you look at angels, they have chakras. They have seven chakras like we do. We have six chakras that you have to keep active, keep alive, and you keep the seventh chakra quiet by being not active, being the pineal gland. The pineal gland physically starts getting active, you die. So you've got to keep it very quiet and let it do its thing on the inner. The angel is a little different. The angel, you've heard what we see angels feel. You know, I mean, if you understand, the angels don't think, they feel. So they work a little bit different than humans do. And so an angel, in order to keep them under control, God created a little problem for them. He makes them work, okay? In the case of the bee kingdom, the angel has six chakras inside of her, and then the seventh chakra is outside of her, and in the case of the bee kingdom, it would be the queen bee. So the seventh chakra of an angel in the bee kingdom is the queen bee. That's why the queen bee behaves like it does. Okay. Now, when the flower starts to come up and pollinate, it's time for the flower to be pollinated by the bee, right? If this didn't happen, we wouldn't have any flowers. So immediately,
The queen bee centers her orophyll out, similar to, it's the same pattern as the angel, basically. So the angel orophyll goes out around the hive. When the orophyll vibratory frequency pattern reaches a certain vibratory level, it connects directly with energy to this flower, and a feedback path is established between the angel's aura, centered off the queen bee, and the flower. Immediately, a worker bee will fly out of the hive and will not fly direct, because a bee cannot fly, it's too heavy, it's 50 times too high, 50 times too heavy to fly with its wing size. So the bee will move on the angel's aura field, flapping its wings, animated by the angel, in this pattern here, come over here to the flower, and it will fly back on the aura field. Okay? When it gets back, it takes this pollen, drops it at the doorway, and becomes propolis, the salve, its healing power. It goes inside, drops the, does a dance on the comb, produces the honey, and then gives the highest nectar of the honey, the royal jelly, to queen bee. Queen bee takes the royal jelly, transmutes it into an etheric energy on a second ether, and feeds the energy, keeps the angel alive. Okay? That's how the angel in turn keeps queen bee alive, the queen bee keeps the angel alive, the queen bee and the angel together keep the bees flying. The bees flying pollinate the flowers, keep the vegetation on the planet then feeds us. Without this action, you wouldn't be here in a physical body. Bottom line. If you were to take a 500-foot post and stick it over the beehive and put a television camera on it, okay, and you were to spray paint iridescent paint on every single bee in the hive and put a time-lapse camera and record the millions of bees going out in the flowers and slow that down or speed it up, the path that these bees are flying on animates what the angel looks like, and you have a perfect image of the bee, of the angel moving. Yeah.
In the current issue of the Whole Earth Catalog, they have an article about the hive mind and the man describing this bee swarm that came out and turned into a donut shape spinning around.
Yeah.
And he ran up and put his head in it just to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, there it is again.
Yeah.
And it kept moving, and he just ran and followed.
It was the entity. Yeah, it was the entity moving.
Yeah.
You know why? Moving was because the queen bee had probably died. Or the queen bee was moving, and they were following the queen bee.
So this whole thing was like an it, not a them.
Yeah. And, well, at the University of Hamburg in Germany, I gave the presentation. The Germans, they'll call you down on it. So they did. So they went out, and they got on the beehive, and they painted all the bees up. And guess what? It took a picture of an angel. Okay? That really happened. Okay? The fire star works on that principle. Okay? Imagine that each one of those five sets systems in there is like the energy of the beehive. And what it sends energy out to is extraterrestrial or channels. Because it goes off to the astral plane and looks for what you tell it to look for, and it will find it, and it will bring it to you, right to that, physically. It will go out, find a spaceship, find an angel, and bring it to you. The trick with that is, tune yourself to that instrument. That's a piano up there. It plays in five chords simultaneously. And you have to tune each one of your chakras to it, and then talk to it, and it'll talk back. And that works. That is one of the very fine pieces of equipment. Been demonstrated worldwide. It's just as unique as the systems 3, a quad system, and it's entirely different. It works entirely different than this stuff down here. Okay? A whole other science is the fire star. That's why it has its own room. Okay? Probably that will talk about that. There's the fire star you saw last night. So I'm going to skip those pictures. She's going to talk about it and how it's doing it. And the same thing, you know, she'll explain it. And they work, and let me tell you, David Tickle has three of them, and one breaks. He stops production. That's the backup shield for it. Now, he wanted to see scalar waves. Now, this is really hard to do. I think it's going to be, well, let's see here. This was a laboratory condition described by the Pleiadian, set up by an individual. This is basically a pyramid, a radiator, lasers, ionization, and a manifestation here, somewhere in here. You almost have to get it in the dark to see this. There it is. You just see it up there on the top. There's two. The scalar waves, depending on whether they're going or coming, are male or female. What do they go through the illusion? Can you tilt that door down? Yeah, right there.
Sorry.
Yeah, this has this. In order to photograph one, you have to use infrared film. This isn't even ordinary film. The painters may just get infrared film. There's a female and a male in these pictures. Well, why don't you just? It's right past the fire star. When this gets a little darker, and then you can turn it on and look at it. She'll point it out to you.
What does it look like? A ladder?
No, it looks like a black hole with a space-time singularity right through the center of it. You'll see it. This is the radar that I worked on. This was Dr. Sierra, by the way. I worked with him in Puerto Rico. He used pyramids and magnets on athletes. This is the radar I worked on when I was part of the Philadelphia experiment. This is 776th Aero Squadron, Point Arena, California. This is the radar that I first mapped extraterrestrials when I was working for the U.S. government. This is me working there in that time. This is the bird that I built with Wernher von Braun at NASA. You might have seen a model of it. This went to the moon. This is a spaceship that Jim Del Pelso and I were working on, 88 feet across. We got stopped on, I don't know, ran out of money or something, but there's a guy on a ladder. It's all pure titanium. This is a ship, Area 51, being flown in Project Galileo, which is flying the extraterrestrial craft. Yeah, and it's a beryllium powered ship. We've already discussed the propulsion system on it. I told you yesterday about the guy that flew it with his zero G suit on. This is a drawing of the inside of it, what the seats look like, and it explains. This is a seat here, seat there. They use television cameras on here. There's heavy lead shielding, and the reactor's right in the center part. There's these back, these round tanks that fill these suits full of liquid. This is the control panel. There's two people flying with these. They take 30 to 60 G's side force. These, because it's an antiquated propulsion system, it doesn't have its own gravity like a Pleiadian ship would. So you have to wear it. This is the implant of Myrna Hansen. Was inducted and planted by the Grays. There's one implant there, and there's one implant right there. Done at one of the hospitals in New Mexico. These are crop circles. Colin Andrews was gives more talks on this. This is one that Andromeda's left. Basically, if you look at Death of Ignorance, this crop circle was left 20 years or 10 years after. Death of Ignorance was written, but you'll see the same diagram in there. This symbolizes the chakras. This is the crown. This is the root chakra. This is the spokes. This is the mathematics that were done by the Brits on it. This is it represents infinity, going to the center of God. And what this crop circle is telling us is that man, through the action of the octahedron or the tetrahedron, will come to us. That's what that says. And of course, what that means is because of the Grays and their fame and their molecular structure will draw the Earth to the awareness of extraterrestrials. That's what that crop circle. And every one of them reads that way. I'm not giving a course in how to read crop circles, but I can read some of them. I've been taught how to read them. This is how the Brits, people over in Britain, do this. Take all the mathematical measurements and everything. All of these drawings are in Death of Ignorance. This crop circle came many years after Death of Ignorance. This is Level Haleakala. One type of recording that I do is I'll shoot energy down with a synthesizer into the bottom of a crater like that, or I can go to an Indian burial ground. And then I have wireless microphones, and I have wireless system. I have a battery-powered synthesizer, a D50, which shoots Pleiadian sound, which is adulting in Mexico. I shoot sound anywhere I want. Comes back, I record it.
that captures the energy of the crater. Then I take this sound that I shot down there, bring it back, and do a 20 dB undermix into my mixes on my albums. And that's where I capture energy. So when you listen to like Atlantis, there's undermixes that you never hear from that energy field. It's one of my recording secrets that I never told you about before. Pretty interesting, all right? This is the spectrum, gases. This is a device that does instantaneous healing. It's called the X1 Healing System. It's a model of it. It generates a scalar wave. Basically, what you do with this is you put a person in front of it, they eyeball it, it generates a central red, generates a central green, generates a central violet. Their hand is in a box with a Corellian camera on it and a full spectrum color camera recording it, and I map the entire hydrogen atom, which maps the entire person's body DNA in less than 1 second. It's a Pleiadian device. We are not allowed to build it at this time. Again, we built one part of one prototype. Then the person, once they record it, we record every aberration in their body that's wrong with them. They go into an Epsom salt bath. This device comes over here and generates proper radiation. It's like a million times more powerful than the receptor, and it causes their body to heal itself within 1 second. Okay. You might have seen it on the day the Earth stood still. It completely can map all the genetics of a human body in less than 1 second. And someday I'll explain how that works. I do know how it works. This is a time machine, a model that I built. This is a real one that I built here in Laguna. It was about 30 feet tall in the backyard, where the backyard is now. It warped all the trees. There's still Roycelot on it. We had to cut it down, made trees grow in spirals. It worked the whole neighborhood, eventually it worked the whole town. They still talk about it here in this town. This is a model of one of the ships that I was starting to build. Yahoo promptly stopped me. This is a model of a beam ship engine. This is the area, the X1 healing machine. Because it can map DNA, obviously it can map anything, can't it? It can map DNA in 1 second. How long would it take to map the universe? 2 seconds. So what happens is the X1 is the device that from the Pleiadian side of view, where I want to go. I want to go to the Earth, I want to go to the Pleiades. I would have a picture of the Pleiades. I would stick it in the X1. The X1 would fire the DNA structure of the Pleiadian galaxy. It would project it out into this big tube. It would be projected outside the ship and it would be there. So the X1 healing machine is the integral part. We'll create a propulsion system. That's why I'm not building anymore. It's not allowed on this planet at this time. There's a model of Semyasi controlling. The control of these spaceships is done by a signature. The signature is at the base of her feet, top of her head, and the palm of her hand. If these three things work, ignition starts. If these don't correlate, some U.S. idiot is in there in one of these ships, it won't, not only will it not work, it will blow up certain parts of the ship. This is the detail of the model that I built.
Why won't they let you build that now?
Forbidden. They don't even want me to talk about it, they don't even think about it. It's not for this world. It's too destructive, using the wrong energy. After the year 2000, maybe they'll let us build one. When you light one of these babies up, like we did this model, which had working optics, you get the same compression lines that you'll see in the scalar lines, because this is the optics. This is called spider optics. When this thing is lit off, it fires the picture, and the picture is carried through the spider optics, and it shoots out the center of the ship. You can see that demonstrated in that Billy Meyer tape, except the one that's there, this bottom projector is up here on the top. So on the top, it goes like this, and it projects a double beam off the top, where this design here projects one off the top and the bottom. This is an earlier design that they had. It has radiation leakage. But it's still funny, good enough for me. I wouldn't mind it. This is a ship that was photographed, White Sands, a number of years ago.
And this next photograph is still in here. This is the craters on the moon. And this is a stuck slide projector. She does this. Okay, now go to the next one. We got one more slide to go here. This is the next version of my time machine that, according to Sannyasi, if you look at the previous one, this is the maiden flight. And this flight will take place sometime in the future, because the next one that I will build will fly. The other one up on the hill wouldn't. It was bolted to the ground. This one, it will fly. And this was photographed in 1943 by Dan Fry, the year I flew it into my own birth year. So this has not occurred yet, but it's already been photographed in time. Okay? That's my ship. Okay? I built that. It hasn't flown yet, but it will fly, and the photograph will be taken. And there's the photograph in this lifetime. That's one ship that I will build. If you look at the time machine, it was built, it looks very similar to that. It just didn't have the outer casing on it that's necessary for flight. I have all the designs and all the drawings. Now you can ask the questions about the time machine. You see, it's deep. And this, once again, ties right into the Philadelphia experiment, doesn't it? You know, I worked on it at the University of Michigan in 1959, 1958. I worked on this technology.
How do you keep the materializing from the mountain
for
somebody else's
craft? Good question. That's why it has flight characteristics. It has to make the time jump. It has to come off the ground. That's exactly what has to happen. And the one that we build up there was only allowed to go ahead in the future 1 millisecond. That's all we were allowed with it. And 1 millisecond, it warped the neighborhood and the entire town. I had to hire a lawyer, and I had to go through the... Step one, primary energy, I'm showing it in the drawings here, boom. Energy from the upper realm, and I discussed it in previous chapters, the 7 levels, which we just mentioned again. It enters the body at the chakra point, strike zone, causing a shock, struck. This shock only lasts a split second, but a lot happens. Mainly life is sustained in our bodies, and gravity is created. Let us follow the sequence. Okay. Some of the energy strikes the body. Some of the energy perfectly balances. Okay? If it didn't, we wouldn't stay in our bodies. We'd be dead. Some of the energy balances perfectly, sustaining life in the form, while some energy collides with the form. Basically, that's the personality, right? Because if we didn't have collision, we wouldn't have personality. We'd all be one. If you don't have antimatter, you don't have matter. If you don't have dissonance, you don't have resonance. You don't have creation. This energy is called strike zone energy and causes fusion of the 3 etheric zones, which during that reaction, the 4 levels of solids are created. Remember I showed you yesterday? First ether, second ether, third ether, ionic gas, liquid, solid. Boom, this blast creates this etheric blast, which is etheric energy, it's physical, but it's etheric, strikes it, causing solid energy to happen. Okay? Although all form is created this way, the spirit, now here's the difference now, we're not creating a rock though, the spirit enters through the chakras first, is the molding essence. So now we've made a collision, we've had a resistance, which is a personality, boom, here comes the spirit. We've also made a cell start to reproduce. The energy constantly permeates all forms this way and forms patterns. If viewed at various intersections, the strike zone itself is a fusion pattern, and the network of strike can be visualized macroscopically as a pyridine orb, or a carbon molecule, that thing up on the top up there. The angle at which the collisions occur to the right, so it is seen as a series of crosses. This is where he was talking about the pyramid is formed in a square, but it's also the crystals. The orb is the framework of the strike and struck zones forming all form as we know it.
It is also the shape of the physical and etheric body relationship. It is a crystal. A crystal, remember, is the perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. Remember, I told you that yesterday, right out of her mouth. This was the first system that we ever had up here. This was the very first thing that they gave you, was that. Now, as the spirit is trapped into the form, so now we've collided, we've created personality, we've created rotation, we've created shock. The spirit has entered and is trapped. This is our freedom here, you know. It's trapped. Woo. It awakens to the spontaneous desire. As soon as this collision takes place, the spirit realizes, uh-oh, I'm stuck in a body, you know. It awakens a spontaneous desire to return to its source. I want to go home. I'm out of here. Once it experiences the form, boom, refeeling. And that's where the big battle of the bowels always occurs, between the spirit trying to get out of the body and the body trying to trap it. And that's where you get fat sometimes. It's been one of the problems that I've always had, because I love to eat, you know. And my spirit really likes to be free, and I love it when I'm thin and I'm high, and I love it when I'm eating. You know, there's this war that goes on in everybody. Okay? The form, isn't that true? If it's human, you know, I don't mind being human, I'm used to it now, but I know what's going on. There's nothing I can do about it, right? But I don't want to, evidently. If the form is clear and moving, with the spirit, it becomes lighter. Now check this out. If the form is clear and moving with the spirit, it becomes lighter. That's more like Roy. He's got more of a body like that. Or Joe. If it is caught in the desire, like me, of the lower nature, the energy will trap and the form becomes heavier. You have a stomach like this. Okay? The constant vacillation between the two natures, this constant vacillation between me having a body like these two over here and myself, creates gravity. Gravity is the interchange of energy from seven planes of consciousness. It is a mutual force causing a downward thrust of seven energies coming from the upward inward direction of spirit. And what she has defined here is the physical energies of the universe striking matter and the spirit going into matter and animating it. I mean, if you read this and understand it, you will have a consciousness like no other. A total synthesis would be either pure light or pure matter. Also occurring in the strike zone is some energy that has worked off karma or spent itself. The action of the animation of the personality, the path of the personality through the moment. Remember, energy is not created or destroyed, it's only transmuted. This coming and going in the strike zones creates a rhythm known as time. Time is the vibratory exchange rate of spirit and matter. Motion is the movement of the divine will being split by desire. Gravity is the recombination of desire ascending to spirit after its expression through form. Anti-gravity detachment or impartiality is created by mind when it is disciplined to be free of desire, thus free of the time zone on the particular plane of consciousness. However, all time on all planes is impenetrable. Each of the seven planes has its own time zone. From our point of view, the higher the plane, the slower the time. Strut zone interchange can be seen as fusion or the return of the kundalini as spirit rises itself into form, creating time. The law of inertia causes a downward flow and the effect of the attraction from the physical to physical, a sort of bonding action, is in a highly developed individual. The organized force is in balance and moves out and away from the physical and creates the anti-gravity state of consciousness, is which what they teach in the transcendental meditation when they levitate, which our system 3 teaches you. That's the secret of that. Control of this energy comes from the mind via the upper mental plane when the lower mind stands aside and allows the higher mind to reach the astral and physical bodies. Anti-gravity consciousness is being reached by people through various yoga disciplines and the side effect...
Well, you have to cut that off right there, but That's a quotation out of my book, Death of Ignorance, if you want to read it. And there's drawings that go with that. So until next Friday night, we'll talk to you then. And I'll finish this little bit of this recording and have it on the show next week. Bye.